Chapter 16. Acknowledge the journey. Life's a journey, not a destination. Most of us have heard this statement before. For me, early in life, I personally never really understood it. As I've shared with you previously, I used to set myself up for failure because of my inexperience and my irrational optimism. I'd set goals and give them deadlines, but I never seemed to reach the goal by the deadline, so I'd get discouraged and want to quit. When I was young, I had a burning desire to reach my business and personal goals, and I still have a fire for my goals, but my understanding of my journey toward those goals is different now. First of all, I reached many of my goals later than I initially expected. Then, as I started reaching many of my business and financial goals, I found that it wasn't enough. It was not only unsatisfying, I was disappointed. I thought that reaching a goal would have a bigger payoff. This is a tendency for many of us, and it can be very unhealthy if this attitude isn't adjusted by a balanced viewpoint. Remember, I told you about the times when I would take other people flying with me to the Caribbean in the first plane I owned? It only had seating for 4 people and was a single-engine airplane. Every time we landed back in the United States to clear customs, we'd park our plane at the airport and park next to a nicer twin-engine airplane, and someone would ask, "When are you going to fly one of those?" Then, when I did buy a larger twin-engine aircraft and we'd be flying back, this time with more people on board, we'd pull up to the customs ramp and park beside a Learjet. Sure enough, I'd hear it again, "When are you going to start flying one of those?" Then I started flying Learjets. I parked beside a 747, and you guessed it, same old question, when does it stop? This illustration gives us an insight to human nature. If we're not careful, we'll program ourselves never to be happy. We must come to a realization that our life is a journey. If you're constantly pushing for the destination, when you get there, you may find it very disappointing because the satisfaction of reaching that goal isn't enough to make you happy for longer than a moment. If you think goals are your destinations, you will eventually stop striving for them because the payoff is really as good as you imagined when you made it a goal in the first place. You have to remember that there will always be someone more beautiful, richer, thinner, faster, younger, more popular. The key is to learn to enjoy the present while you focus on the future and never forget the big picture of your journey. 2 years before he died, millionaire tycoon J.P. Getty said, "Money doesn't necessarily have any connection with happiness, maybe with unhappiness." One of my millionaire mentors, Dan Bagley, used to tell me that if you don't know how to handle money, all it will do is make you comfortably unhappy. One billionaire had a series of unhappy marriages in his life. When asked what gave him the most happiness, even in view of his great wealth, he thought a while and answered, "A walk along a good beach and then a swim." That is something the poorest person can often do free of charge. Thinking like this may go against your grain. If you're caught up in struggling for more money or possessions, you may tie those possessions to your definition of happiness. That's because our society programs us to reach the next milestone, and messages from the media and advertisers reinforce that our happiness will be tied to our possessions or our goal achievement. And the programming starts when we're young. As a kid, I remember never being tall enough to get on that ride at my favorite theme park. I hated that little silhouette guy at the ride entrance. I remember going back a few years later and being tall enough. It was a great feeling. But I had bigger goals than the theme park ride. I was just dying to be a teenager. That wasn't enough, though. Next, we want a driver's license, then a car, then marriage, then kids, and then we can't wait till they leave the house. These days, don't we wish we could just be kids again? Play, 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 have fun, and have no responsibilities? It's important to be motivated to strive for your next goal. It's important to never be complacent about everything because that's the first step to becoming a couch potato. On the other hand, if you can't ever get joy from your accomplishments along the way, that can be equally discouraging. If you can move away from thinking of goals as destinations and consider the bigger journey of your life, you'll be more likely to experience more and greater happiness, and ironically, you'll be motivated to set and achieve more goals and be happier even before you reach your goal or milestone. Mastering this can be one of the keys to true happiness. I recall years ago, a friend asked me if I would love to own a Gulfstream jet. New, they sell for over $40 million. Sure, who wouldn't love to fly around like that? But I told him it wasn't one of my goals. I've got to stop somewhere. I regularly move up the aviation ladder with a new plane and helicopter goals, the business ladder with new company and staff growth plans, and the personal ladder. I also realize that every goal requires a price to be paid for that achievement, and I know that the price I would have to pay to own the Gulfstream jet would not be worth it to me. This balance took me years to master. I remember going to one of the many Sandals resorts in the Caribbean. Wow, they are impressive resorts. A tropical paradise can really affect your perspective. Because I know the owner of the resort and frequently work with him and his company, I have a personal connection. I used to get discouraged going to his resorts because I thought I could never accomplish anything like he had. It can be overwhelming when you see your own accomplishments compared to the achievements of a billionaire. I've learned that I should compare my accomplishments to my own goals and simply use the impressive accomplishments of others as proof that nothing is impossible. I wouldn't ever say that I'm complacent, but I do try to take time regularly to consider how many of my goals I've achieved. That big picture view helps me acknowledge the journey, and it gives me a sense of happiness and satisfaction along the way. That can be just the kind of thing you need to recharge your batteries. Having the right big picture focus can be just the thing you need in order to keep your goals and the opinions of others about your accomplishments from renting space in your head. In earlier chapters, I've asked you to write down things like emotions that help you be productive and those which are unproductive. I've had you write down goals for various exercises too. Now it's time to take a truly broad view of your motivations, emotions, and goals and consider the times in your life when you've been truly happy. I'm not just talking about laughing at a stand-up special on TV that features your favorite comedian. I'm talking about the kind of happy where you find yourself smiling during an experience that's not necessarily funny. The kind of experience where the smile is on the inside. The kind of happy that seems to touch on emotions like content, satisfied, and truly optimistic. The kind of happy that compels you to thank your Creator for all you've been given. Get out your pad and write truly happy times on the top of a new page. Then close your eyes and remember the times in your life when that deep level of satisfaction or that satisfied happiness filled you from the inside, and jot down when and where you were. Usually doing this exercise can help most people get a bit more in touch with their sense of satisfaction and gratitude. If you're looking through the prism of recent tragedy or clinical depression, your present attitude can be distorted by overpowering negative feelings, and you might be looking at those great happy times as strictly in your past and out of your grasp because of whatever has you down right now. If that better describes your current view, try focusing on the fact that even though true happiness might seem to be outside your grasp, you have a book full of tools to overcome challenges, and one or more of them will certainly help you pull yourself out of your present to a more fulfilling, positive future. Even if the feelings evade you right now, keep in mind that there will be a time in the future when you will feel better and closer to experiencing that deeply satisfying sense of happiness again. Use your analytical mind to acknowledge your present mood and then admit that things won't always stay the same they are. Once you can wrap your thoughts around a few of those times when you experience true happiness, consider that you will benefit if you can regularly revisit this state of mind. Caution, if you believe that revisiting your truly happy times is a solution in of itself, then you've missed the point entirely. This exercise is a tool you can use to reframe your perspective of your journey. It's absolutely not a way to fix problems. People are empowered by all kinds of different thoughts and drive toward goals because of these various triggers. Focusing on this kind of happiness can be one of the most motivating triggers, not to mention that it can help you put your daily journey in perspective. It's fine to live one day at a time and focus on the present, but regularly considering your own big picture is also a necessary perspective to maintain. If you think about your life's work and your journey as a literal cross-country trip you might take, You should understand that simply living day to day with the "we'll cross the bridge when we come to it" attitude can be less than clever planning. Sure, you can't actually cross a bridge before you reach it, but if you look at a map and plan your journey, you might find that there are restrictions on the bridge you plan to use, and you'll need to take a different route. If you don't periodically look at your journey from this perspective, you can waste years of your life taking a path that leads to a dead-end road that you don't know was there because you just have been living day to day. At the risk of taking this analogy too far, you'll also want to get updated maps every year or two. New roads get built and old ones are closed. Current maps are critical to your journey. What I mean is that you should consider your journey regularly and plan some time every year to look at the big picture of your journey. Not only will this help you stay on track toward your goals, it can be amazingly rewarding to see how far you've come. It's easy to get caught up in the drudgery of daily work, so taking the big picture into consideration regularly can help you stay on course. And if you've got some medium or long-range goals, you'll frequently find that looking at this big picture will become a source of that transcendent happiness we talked about earlier. Life's a journey, not a destination. Nice thought, but it's far more useful when you acknowledge the journey and use that realization to make sure you stay on the best path for you. In Chapter 16, we covered, if you are strictly goal-focused and ignore your journey, when you reach a big goal, your achievement will be hollow. Life is a gift. Goals are milestones. The path should be cherished as well as the milestones. Part of determining appropriate goals is understanding what your life will be like as you strive for those goals. Enjoying life between milestones should be a goal too. Often, incredibly wealthy people get great enjoyment from things that are free. Happiness can help you along the way toward your goals, and the trip to your goals can make you happy too. It should be a win-win situation. Occasionally, stepping back from your goals to acknowledge your journey can help you see if you're still on the best path to the goal. Maybe there's a new road to your destination that you'd otherwise miss. This concludes Chapter 16. Chapter 17, it's time to re-edit your video. Whether or not you've been involved in the television or movie business, undoubtedly you've seen a behind-the-scenes program about what it took to create a particular movie. On TV shows, there's somebody every week talking about the months of filming on location in New Zealand, followed by months of editing, that all went into making the latest film. Consider the hours and hours of film material that hits the cutting room floor, all to make a 90-minute statement in a movie theater. The choice of scenes the director keeps and the many more he decides to cut all evolve into a finished film that conveys the director's vision of a story he wants to relate to the viewer. The same kind of thing happens on a smaller scale, more accelerated scale when it comes to TV news and a 30-minute entertainment show. There are far more minutes of captured video than ever make it to air. That's because the director or reporter has only a limited amount of time to tell the story, and she decides what is important to the story and what can be edited out. Whether or not you realize it, you've got a video from your own about your life, and you play it for yourself now and then. Everyone's life is absolutely filled with years of experiences, stories and emotions, reflecting humor, tragedy, boredom, intrigue, solitude, celebration and desire. Then consider that your story is still unfolding every day. Most people haven't sat in an imaginary editing suite for hours reviewing their life's video or experiences in order to create the most motivating, uplifting, thoughtful, intelligent, comprehensive, forward-thinking, compassionate, insightful, and compelling video possible. And even fewer people have considered that they have enough video on file that they could probably make a few variations of their video in order to tell their story the right way whenever they need. Unfortunately, most people just watch clips of whatever videos are laying around, and the editing is deplorable. It's truly junk television. The great news is that this book has walked you through dozens of ways you can help yourself have a fresh perspective on life. When you consider your life and all that you're going through, and when you're interpreting your negative emotional patterns, having this additional way of looking at your life, the video, can be helpful. If you find yourself watching tragedy-centered videos all day, pop in a tape of an uplifting movie to shift your mood. Okay, enough of the video analogy. I'm sure you get it. I'd like to take the opportunity here at the close of the book to share a few stories that could easily have been in earlier chapters. I've saved them for here because as you read the stories, if you consider how having the right video playing can change your state of mind while everything around you seems to be going crazy, it will give you even greater insight to my reactions at the time and encourage you to use the video technique for yourself. And there's even a story about how I've helped my nephew create a little video he has been able to play to himself over the years. Let me start by telling you that I have the greatest respect for law enforcement officials all across the country. They have a difficult job and work hard to help people and keep us all safe. Yet, in spite of the hard work and obvious peril most officers experience regularly on behalf of the citizenry, there are occasionally those who seem to have attended a different type of police academy. I recall one multi-day trip flying to California from Florida to a segment for a television show, and on the way to California, I had two speaking engagements, one in Alabama and the second in Wichita. I woke up early in the morning and landed in Alabama, did my speaking engagement, and then flew out to Wichita. It made for a long day, but I took my good friend Dominic with me for company, and because he had some flying experience, I was able to take a break now and then. Oh, one more thing. It will help if you know that Dominic and I were both born in Jamaica, but his skin is light brown. When we finally landed in Wichita, after our long flight from Alabama, we didn't want to wait for the rental car company to deliver our car, so before I landed the plane, I radioed ground operations to have our rental car pulled up the moment we landed. I do this all the time. Once the car pulls up, it's customary for the line person who dropped the car to assist you with any luggage. I didn't need to be anywhere until Monday morning, and since it was only Saturday, I wanted to take a few minutes and organize the airplane. While I was still in the cockpit, I yelled out to the young man that I appreciated him bringing the car plane side, but we didn't need any further assistance. I reasoned that there was no sense in having him wait for 10 minutes or more for me to organize things. He seemed curious and tried to peek inside the cabin of the airplane. I didn't give it much thought at the time, but I'm sure he couldn't see much because we had all the windows covered up during the flight. I always keep my windows covered with sunshades, except when flying, but because no one was in the airplane with Dominic and I, we left most of the windows covered, so that would be one less thing that we had to do when we got to Wichita. We finished up at the plane by covering all the windows with sunshades. After straightening up the plane, Dominic and I got in the car and drove to our hotel. Before arriving in Kansas, I made an appointment with one of the local airplane manufacturers to visit their plant on Sunday. Dominic and I were interested in looking at some of their jets. On Sunday, as we were leaving the hotel for our tour, we noticed that the hotel seemed really quiet, especially the wing that we were in. After we came back from our jet plant tour, we decided to relax a bit and rest up for the speaking engagement the next morning and our flight to California for the television program. It was only the middle of the afternoon, but we both fell asleep and we were jolted awake by a knock at the door. I was in one of those sleepy states, you know, when you hear the door but you're not sure what's real and what's part of your dream. Dominic was a bit more awake than me, so he opened the door. He woke me up and I was greeted by three DEA agents standing by my bed with 9mm pistols. As I am not accustomed to waking up with DEA agents, I was caught a bit off guard. Three armed agents. One seemed to be obsessed with his mic. He kept talking to some other agents outside. I'll call him Mr. Microphone. What was amazing to me is that they had even more agents outside. How many DEA agents does it take to bring down a public speaker and his friend? The special agent in charge told me that he had solid reason to conclude that we were big-time drug smugglers, and he proceeded to pull out a warrant from a judge to enter my aircraft. Mr. Microphone looked over to the special agent as he began the questioning. I guess he's called special agent because he's got to ask all the questions. He looks at me and asks me point blank, "Do you have drugs on your airplane?" I said no. Then I followed up with, "Seriously, guys, this is a joke, right?" I'm going to make a call. I know who put you up to this. They wouldn't let me make a phone call. I still thought this had to be a joke, but their guns look pretty darn authentic. He got a bit louder as he asked the same question again. Do you have drugs on your plane? I looked at him and said, when I landed, I had no drugs on my plane. Now, if you guys planted drugs on my plane, then I have drugs on my plane. Maybe I've seen too many movies. For future reference, if a DEA agent ever asks you if you have drugs on your plane, the best response is not, if you planted drugs on my plane, then I have drugs on my plane. For some reason, they didn't like my response, but at least it was true. They wouldn't stop the questioning. They were absolutely convinced that they had two drug smugglers who were headed straight to jail. They searched the hotel room, they checked the bathrooms, the mattress, you name it, nothing. Two things came to mind at this point. One, thank goodness I didn't have to clean up hotel rooms for a living. And two, frustrated DEA agents are less friendly than you might hope. After more questioning, they discovered that my friend and I are both originally from Jamaica. I'm not sure why the location of our birth has anything to do why we were in Wichita that day, but it did seem to answer their question about why a Caucasian and a non-white could be friends. Add our Jamaican origin to the fact that the type of airplane I was flying at the time is very well known for trafficking drugs because it can hold so much weight, and they felt they had an airtight case. It was about then that it finally clicked as to why our hotel seemed so deserted. I later found out that the DEA had been hot on our trail shortly after we arrived at the hotel. Someone tipped them off from the airport. A black guy and a white guy didn't want any help at the airport, and their winners were covered. Oh, and they're in a plane that's great for carrying drugs. That was the full extent of their tip about what just had to be smugglers. What other explanation could there be? To this day, I can't get over the manpower the Wichita office of the DEA dedicated to a tip from a suspicious airport employee. They had so many officers and agents tracking us that you would think that we were the culmination of some huge nationwide drug sting. They actually shut down an entire wing of our hotel for nearly 24 hours, and the DEA agents had us under surveillance. They had followed us to the plant to see the jets. As the questions continued, they wanted to know what we were doing looking at jets. I guess I seemed a bit young to be looking at jets. They had to be thinking, normal people can't afford jets, so these guys must be trafficking drugs. Talk about limited beliefs. The agents had told the hotel staff that we were big-time drug dealers and employees had reason to fear their lives. Not only have I never done drugs in my life, these guys were unnecessarily scaring the heck out of the hotel staff with outright lies. The hotel staff was instructed to call the agents and tell them anything we asked or spoke to them about. That's how they knew that we were going to go see jets. We asked the hotel staff for directions, so they had to tell the agents. They separated Dominic and me and drove us to the airport as they continued to bombard us with more questions. It was easy for Dominic and me to keep our story straight because we're actually just a couple of friends on the way to do a couple of speaking engagements and a TV show in California. When we got to the security gate at the airport, even more agents came out of nowhere. We approached the gate at the airport perimeter. Now, I guess it's just my sense of humor and a feeling that I needed to lighten up the mood a little. I looked over to Mr. Microphone and asked, "You wouldn't think it'd be too funny if I tried to open the door about now and go for a run, would you?" For some reason, his sense of humor wasn't at quite the same level as mine was that day. Now, I've seen cop shows on TV, so I know this is the point where things are supposed to get really dramatic. Dominic and I both arrived and were driven plane side. They asked us one more time, "Are you sure there isn't anything you want to tell us?" I said, "Yes, who scratched up my airplane?" An agent said, "The dogs did." "The what?" I asked. The agent continued, "We sent out a drug-sniffing dog, and he went berserk because he smelled drugs, and that's how we were able to get this search warrant." "Are you sure you don't have any drugs on the plane?" I insisted that I didn't. You could tell that every agent there was just waiting to haul out bales of something they could stand in front of with cameras on the Wichita Nightly News and talk about the months of work that went into this huge takedown. After opening the door, he saw my huge stash of CDs and tapes. box after box of seminar handouts and not even the slightest hint of anything drug-related. Needless to say, the special agents didn't feel too special after all that. We didn't even get an apology. 9 months later, we did get a check for the damage the dogs did to the paint, though. I just went to Wichita for a speaking engagement to look at jets and to relax a little on the way to California. And my adventure turned out to be something I could add to my video collection, literally. I was able to have fun with all this in the local Wichita media and talked about my little visit. I did all kinds of interviews, but unfortunately, the press only heard my side because the agents got a little amnesia and wouldn't say anything to the media. To this day, I wonder if that drug-sniffing dog ever got in trouble. Maybe they put him at a desk job for a few weeks. I think it's important to allow yourself to be flexible and adaptable to change. As circumstances change, you may have to re-edit your video again. As we experience new and different things in our lives, we must change. For instance, people's values change the moment they have a child. They look at things from a different perspective than before. Adjustments in thinking and lifestyle need to be made. As you enter a new financial level, higher or unfortunately lower, you again have to make adjustments in your video. Whenever you begin to experience things that you never thought of, the quicker you can adjust your new experiences, the better off you'll be. Successes are truly built on failures. One of the most powerful and rewarding benefits of not letting things rent space in your head is the fact that we all travel through uncharted territory and we're bound to fail regularly along the way. Not letting things rent space in your head means that you will be able to invent, create, and master new ways of doing this. A perfect example of this is the space travel. Decades ago, it was considered absurd to imagine we could go into space. Then, man made the trip to the moon. More than once, did people lose their lives to get there? Of course, but the never-give-up attitude allowed us to persevere. The improvement of space travel and the quality of the technology used to get there has often improved based on accidents and failure. But dwelling on failure didn't launch a single ship. Adaptation and innovation did. I recall years ago flying back to the Caribbean in a rented plane and losing engine oil pressure. Oil started spewing out from the engine's cover onto the window. I could barely see a thing. I was over land and it was obvious that I needed to abort the flight and soon too. I was able to find a makeshift runway. It was a road between a barricade and an active road. I glided in. After an experience like that, your mind can really play games with you. Quit or keep flying. I must admit, at the time I was a bit skittish about getting back on the horse, but I refused to quit flying. I flew the next day. For some people, they'll never fly again after an incident like that. My thought was, I've spent so much money, time, and effort learning to fly that it would be a waste for me to quit now. In retrospect, it made me a better pilot. It also motivated me to buy and maintain my own helicopters and planes and rent as little as possible. My training was expensive, but part of that training was how to handle emergencies. I was able to use my training. It paid off. Some people have family members or friends who die in a plane crash. They have chosen to never fly again. I've heard of people having a family member die in a car crash, and now they walk to work and they will never drive a car. These are examples of people who haven't re-edited their video. It takes effort and it's a continual process. If you agree with this, do something about it. The last thing I want you to do while reading this book is to nod your head and say, "Yep, I agree." What I share with you will only benefit you if you follow through. That means you're going beyond agreeing into belief, and belief is what ultimately gets results. What can make it so challenging to re-edit our thinking when things get tough is the fact that we have a tendency to get wrapped around the emotion of the moment and we find it hard to see beyond the problem. Maybe you've been told to remember your successes. That's a good idea, but there's something that works a lot better. A successful tool in being able to re-edit your video is to stay focused, not on just your past successes, but on your specific past failures, which you turned into successes. Remembering our successes does help, but focusing on what it took to get there is even wiser. This is where the third step, new positive feelings and emotions in the four-step process does for you. Remember I told you to write down new feelings and experiences and the negative feelings that you had experienced before the new ones? That helps you remember your path, thought painful at times, to your success. We all love to hear stories about the underdog winning. That's what page 3 does for us. Often the more painful the ride to the top, the more memorable and motivating it becomes. There's a simple way I've used this principle to help my young nephew grow up with a healthy sense of self-esteem and an I can do it attitude. I've been putting my nephew in the cockpit and letting him actually fly since he was about 5 years old. When he was about 10, I let him help with radio communications and I had him talk to the air traffic controller. We were on a runway ready to take off from an airport that didn't have a control tower. At small airports like this, you just make an announcement on the radio of your intentions, and if there's anyone in the area, they will acknowledge. Then you continue broadcasting your intentions, where you are on the runway, direction of travel, etc., so that everyone in the vicinity can use that airport safely. As we were about to take off, I told Stephen what to say, and it was a bit lengthy. With engines running and ready for departure, he looked at me and said, "I can't say all that, I can't." I said, "You can do it. You're on the runway. You've got to." He pushed the microphone and he did it. Immediately after takeoff, I congratulated him. Later on in the flight, I reminded him what happened. I said, "Remember when we were about to take off and I asked you to talk on the radio? What did you say?" I got him to repeat what he had said first. "I can't," he said. Then I asked him, "But what happened?" He said, "I did it." And I reinforced his success once again with more congratulations. Then I asked him, "If you ever think you can't do something, you what?" "I can," he said proudly. We added a clip to his video. To this day, I can still remind him of the radio accomplishment. I go through the very same scenario. In fact, I did it this past weekend when we were together. I try to do this once or so a month, and I do it out of the blue. The timing has absolutely nothing to do with a particular situation where he's trying to tackle something challenging. Oh, I'll certainly remind him of it then too, but I've been reminding him of this for years anyway. I plan to remind him of this for decades to come. It's a constant reinforcement that he can't, yet he did. He now has an example of a triumph over "I can't," which he can use to prove it. It seems quite simple, and it is, but it is also very powerful. This helps him take control of future thoughts that might want to control him. So what about you? Are there things in your personal or professional life that you're not doing that you should be doing? Is there some negative experience you've had or someone else had that's renting space in your head and preventing you from moving forward? It is my hope that this book has given you countless ideas and tools to assist you in re-editing your thinking on your journey. To truly master this, you have to be willing to make change and keep an open mind. Trust your own intuition and use emotions and feelings to your advantage rather than allowing them to control you. Keep identifying areas in your life that you want to improve and do specific things, even small things, to get the results you're looking for. The success that you see others have, couples married for 30 or 40 years who truly seem to be happy, financial successes of business professionals and sales superstars, these things don't happen overnight. They're part of a bigger plan that's been in play for a long time. Just make sure that you're always looking for some way to chip away at your plan. Don't let a day go by that you're not improving. Do something every day to work toward your goals. Keep moving on mastering even greater control and don't stop re-editing your video. In Chapter 17, we covered. The collection of your life's experience is too overwhelming to consider every day, so when you take a minute to define yourself, you summarize. If your whole life were a film, you'd be working from a 5-minute highlight reel. Choosing better clips for your life for your video can change your whole outlook. This concludes Chapter 17. Chapter 18, Energizing Your Life in Spite of the Obstacles, Putting It All Together. Regardless of your path so far in life or your plans and future goals, even your dreams, there will inevitably be obstacles. It's not normal for most people to develop a comprehensive goal strategy, work toward each of your goals, regularly revisit your goal list, assess your progress, adjust your goals and actions, and accomplish all you can. The fact is, people don't usually set goals unless they're taught to. And most parents and teachers don't teach children the value of setting goals, much less explain how or why goals are important. And usually, when someone hears about setting goals and giving their goals a deadline, when they start working toward the goal and an obstacle gets in the way, many who are new to goals think working on goals is simply too hard. They don't bother with goals because they don't like running into obstacles and feeling like they've failed at their goal. Ironically, there are just as many obstacles and challenges for people who don't have goals and just go wherever life takes them. Then they get caught up in just trying to exist. If living day to day without any major goals means you're going to be confronted by obstacles anyway, then you ought to go ahead and set your goals. If you're going to have challenges, you should at least have a reason for them. If you lack vision in your life and you haven't established goals and a plan for your life, when you experience obstacles, it will tend to discourage you even more. What's especially discouraging is that regularly experiencing obstacles without having the clarity and motivation that comes from purpose breeds a negative attitude. People can easily fall into the trap of adopting the old, here we go again attitude. Bad things always happen to me. But with vision, a goal-setting mentality, a degree of self-mastery, and a never-give-up mindset, we begin to understand that obstacles are a necessary part of our life, and they frequently even have a purpose. The purpose may be to teach us a lesson, or possibly nothing more than just to make us appreciate achieving our goal and accomplishing or overcoming the obstacle. Nevertheless, our perception of problems, obstacles, or challenges takes on a whole new meaning when we have a goal. Oh, and it doesn't mean we aren't bothered by the troubles of these obstacles, but we understand that with goals and visions, we must often travel an uncharted course. Uncharted courses are bound to bring unexpected challenges. It's something we should come to expect. I know you've heard the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. Compare that with people who just exist. They're not focused on an outcome, so when problems do arise, there is no purpose for moving them to solve their challenge. They have no drive to master their circumstances and avoid letting circumstances control them. Without the purpose of goals, the autopilot in their mind will rarely lead them to the thought, let's solve this problem. More often, their lack of purpose leads them to think, woe is me. Earlier in the book, I told you about a gentleman who bought an old derelict hotel. Remember, it was stone's throw away from an international airport? Remember that the property had sat vacant for an extended period and no one in the hotel industry would touch it. There were certainly challenges in making a hotel property prosperous in spite of the judgment of everyone else in the hotel industry. Even though he was new to the hotel business, the developer didn't let things like other people's opinion rent space in his head. He had a goal and overcame his challenges. Maybe you're thinking this story is a quaint tale of some little beachside inn and a proprietor who was a one-hit wonder. That couldn't be further from the truth. The man who purchased the hotel by the airport is the Honorable Gordon Butch Stewart. His name may not ring a bell to you, but his hotels should. His properties comprise the world's number one all-inclusive resort, and they have held that distinction for over a decade. Sandals Resorts and Beaches Resorts are among the most recognized tropical paradise destinations in the world. Butch, as his friends call him, had become one of the world's most successful hoteliers. His privately owned company boasts more than 20 first-class resorts in the Caribbean. Some properties are valued at over $100 million. His resorts are in Jamaica, Turks and Caicos, Antigua, Bahamas, and St. Lucia, and there's no sign of slowing down. His resorts, his organization, his influence on the region and the world are all simply amazing. Butch Stewart's vision and his clarity of purpose allowed him to make decisions and overcome obstacles and truly energize his life and the lives of everyone he meets. He has mastered energizing life in spite of the obstacles. When we've developed the mindset not to let people or our own negative thoughts rent space in our heads, we can move forward with conviction. Our minds think in terms of alternate possibilities. When others think your ideas are off the wall, you think of them as normal and possible. You begin living in a world with practical, limitless possibilities, a world that offers incredible options, and it's a world that others just can't see. I have the opportunity to spend time with Butch from time to time. When you watch someone at his level, when you can see how he works and conducts business, it becomes evident that after many years of not allowing others to rent space in his head, he has developed a phenomenal amount of confidence. Confidence based on his track record of successes. People at this level have the ability to regularly begin new ventures. That almost goes without saying. But Butch and a few others like him can invent new ways of doing things, see new opportunities for success that no one has ever thought of before. They have no doubt in their own ability to turn ideas into reality despite what obstacles come in their way. One thing I found in spending time with very successful business people, those who make hundreds of millions and even billions, is that they all have a tremendous amount of confidence. They are the epitome of confidence. With this confidence comes a natural wall of protection that prevents other things from renting space in your head. This confidence comes from regularly adding their page 3 in the 4-step process. They have an abundance of new positive feelings and experiences. When you have nothing on your page 3, then your confidence is easily shaken. As you have new ideas and share them with others, you can become too easily influenced by what others say and think. This lack of confidence will cause you to be wishy-washy. Always remember, if you're wishy-washy in your thinking, you will be wishy-washy in your results. Another great example of energizing your life in spite of the obstacles is Sir Richard Branson. He certainly has well-earned confidence and a proven track record in business as a globe-trotting adventurer. He's made a considerable investment in commercial space travel. If you'd followed any of his adventures, it's obvious this ballooning, aqua-car-driving billionaire doesn't take himself too seriously and seems to have a sense of fun in everything he does. He even bought 6 spaceships. How in the world could someone do that if they let others rent space in their head? The ability to create visions and make them happen like Butch and Richard have done doesn't happen overnight. To many observers who look at what shining stars like these have accomplished in business, it's mind-blowing and overwhelming. That assessment is certainly understandable. These gentlemen do billions in business each year. Their individual net worth is beyond most people's frame of reference. If you ask most people, could you be like either of these successful people? Most would have a hard time picturing it because they see where they are personally right now and where Branson and Stewart are. There is a massive gap between the two lifestyles. But allowing that mental gap to get in your way is tantamount to selling yourself short. That's because you're looking at the end, not the beginning. Here's what I mean. If all you had were a basement and a computer, and you were asked to type a student magazine for your school, could you do that? I think most of us could imagine that. For that matter, if you are not good at typing or writing, we could just convince a fellow student to help us. Seems pretty easy. How about this scenario? Could you sell air conditioners? Okay, some people who lack confidence in sales are doubting themselves, so let me make it a little more appealing. Could you sell air conditioners if you lived on a small tropical island that got very hot during the day and very few residences or businesses had air conditioners? If you were one of the few people that had air conditioners to sell, do you think that would be an easier sales position? Richard Branson's first venture was putting together a student magazine in his basement. Butch Stewart sold air conditioners on the island of Jamaica. He was one of the first to offer them. When I asked people if they think they could develop a student newspaper or sell air conditioners on a Caribbean island, most people can get their minds around that. Yet there's a tremendous difference between these starter businesses and the conglomerates developed by each of these entrepreneurs. The distance between these two points is 30 years of independent thought and decision-making, 30 years of believing in themselves and their goals, 30 years of not letting others rent space in their heads. If you chip away at anything for 30 years, you are bound to have some degree of success, though most will not reach billionaire status. We often look at the success of others, and all we see is where they are now. I can promise you that when Richard Branson was making student magazines in his basement, he wasn't thinking, one day I'm going to own an airline and have an incredibly successful music label and buy a few spaceships. One thing leads to another. You need to keep several things in mind as you develop your big picture view. First, there will always be unexpected challenges. Deal with them and move on. Second, it always takes longer than you think it should to reach your really big goals, and often even the little ones. Don't let your calendar turn into a roadblock. Adjust your plan and move on. Third, look at the whole process as a journey. If you tie your satisfaction to the journey rather than a particular goal, practically everything about your life will be better. Finally, don't let anything outside of your own good judgment influence you to give up your goal. Take advice. Listen to advisors with experience. Avoid irrational optimism. Then move forward with your plans. Don't let others rent space in your head. When Richard Branson was asked, "How do you cope when things don't go your way?" he responded, "Whenever I experience any kind of setbacks, I always pick myself up and try again. I prepare myself to have another stab at things with the knowledge I've gained from the previous failure." Yes, he uses the word failure. He continued, "My mother always taught me never to look back in regret, but to move on to the next thing." The amount of time that people waste on failures rather than putting that energy into another project always amazes me. I have fun running the Virgin businesses, so a setback is never a bad experience, just a learning curve. How about Butch Stewart? I can't imagine him in his early career while he's personally installing air conditioners in people's homes thinking, "I'm going to own the world's most successful all-inclusive hotels and have my own yachts and private jets." Success takes time, and this is one more reason we have to make it a journey, not a destination. You shouldn't just get caught up in thinking you need 30 years. And don't worry that you're starting too late either. Colonel Saunders, founder of KFC restaurant chain, started his venture after his retirement. The point we must keep in mind is that it takes time, but you have to start somewhere. Now is as good a time as any. It may sound trite, but it's true. If they can do it, you can too. You might not think that you can be where Branson and Stewart are, but you can start with the same humble beginnings each of them did. George Harrison initially didn't write any of the Beatles songs, he just played and sang. John Lennon and Paul McCartney were writing all the songs in their early days, and he said, "If they could do it, so can I." George started writing and made millions more. Who wants to be a billionaire? Most people would at least admit they would enjoy the financial benefits of being at the level of Branson and Stewart, the jets, the yachts, and exotic vacations. By no means am I suggesting that everyone who reads this book should make it a goal to be a billionaire. I personally don't have a goal to be a billionaire. I know the price they have to pay to reach that goal, and I'm not willing to pay that price. In spite of that, I have high goals for myself, and I'm especially interested in what enables these billionaires to get to these heights without letting people or things rent space in their heads. With this understanding, I know what I'm able to accomplish professionally, and I can take my business and personal life to the level I wish. I can accomplish whatever I want as long as my plans work within my values and beliefs and those of my family. You can certainly do the same. If you are able to develop the mindset of the people you've just read about, you can chart your own course and determine where you want to be in your personal and professional life. That's control. That's exciting. In chapter 18, we covered, just because you know how to overcome what's been holding you back so far, that doesn't mean everything will be smooth sailing from here forward. Setting and achieving goals and constantly trying to refresh your view of your journey will keep you sharp and moving in the right direction. Simply choosing to take control of their life is something 98% of people miss out on. Even if no one has accomplished what you want to do, that doesn't mean it can't be done. You should be the first. This concludes Chapter 18. Chapter 19. Fill your own well so your cup can run over to help others. Have you ever tried to help someone who seemed to be very depressed and discouraged? If you're not careful, those emotions can rub off on you. You will actually start taking on some of their emotions. That is a cost to you. Obviously, if you give away money or possessions, there's a cost to you in dollars. If you give up your time, then that's time you can't spend on other things which are valuable to you and need your attention. Assuming you agree that's important to give to others, you should include resource recovery as part of your giving plan. If you're talking about giving money away, you won't be able to help others for very long if you end up homeless. That goes without saying. Yet I regularly see situations where people give away more than they can afford to give because they feel guilty for having what someone else considers too much. Most people would consider airplane ownership extravagant. In fact, I know people who would suggest that I should sell my airplane and give the money to charity. That's an incredibly short-sighted view. First of all, if I didn't love flying, I wasn't driven to own a plane and a helicopter, I wouldn't have worked so hard to be able to buy them. What's more, I'm occasionally able to fly special needs children and their families at no cost to them to various places for medical treatment through the Angel Flight program. I could have never helped these people unless I had a significantly large airplane and the budget for travel. I can continue to contribute to charities and help deserving families only as long as I can keep my own financial resources in line. The same is true for emotional giving. If you share the gift of personal, emotional investment with people in need, you must consider that you will need to recharge your own batteries. Some people recharge their emotional batteries by focusing on uplifting positive things in their life, which help them to feel good enough to get to the emotional trenches with someone in need. So if giving away money or property means that you must have a plan for earning more to care for yourself and future charitable efforts, and if giving of yourself emotionally requires that you do things to enrich yourself emotionally, then how can you create more time so you have time to give to others? Strictly speaking, you can't create more time. All you can do is rearrange your priorities and devote more or less time to various activities. Since most people understand that you have to make money to be able to give it away, I'd like to focus on the other resources involved in giving. I believe that you need to be a bit selfish in order to be a good giver. I really like what self-made billionaire Oprah Winfrey has to say about the subject. Fill your own well so your cup can run over to help others. When you consider that statement, it's incredibly powerful. It especially means a lot to self-starter and accomplished-oriented personalities. Motivation to keep pushing yourself to the level remains as strong as ever. Even your giving is motivated by desire rather than guilt. When people are motivated by achieving goals and they recognize the benefits of helping others, they are naturally moved to accomplish in order to improve their own position and in order to share their benefits. It creates a win-win situation. But keep in mind that this applies to more than money. If you don't do things that enrich you, motivate you, and repay you while you give away your resources, you will eventually be spent in every sense of the word. I know parents of large families who do absolutely everything they can and sacrifice personal pleasures and rewards in favor of being there full-time for their family and especially the kids. The problem in this scenario is that the giving parent or parents don't correlate their contribution to their family with resources that have to be replenished. Maybe they look at their efforts as their job or duty, but if they could just figure out some way to refill their resources, they would have even more to give to their family and not feel so depleted at the end of every day. Unfortunately, they feel guilty if they allow themselves to take time off from the kids or the office to refresh their mind and soul. But a live parent is better than a dead one. A live manager is better than a dead one. When we allow ourselves to get this hectic and don't regain control, we are that much more susceptible to all kinds of negative influences. Before long, there will be all kinds of stuff renting space in our heads, and we won't have the energy to evict the unwelcome intruders. So if you agree that you need to fill your own well first, do you know how? You should. If you want to keep enjoying the benefits of giving, you must pace yourself. Pacing yourself does two things. One, it helps us stop and smell the flowers along the way. Occasionally, slowing down a bit or relaxing is a reward in of itself. And second, getting away from those things that tap our resources refuels us to keep helping others without feeling so drained. It lets us have more so we can give more. Mastering the balance between giving and refueling gives you longevity in what you do and helps you from burning out. Plus, you'll have a much more fulfilling life. Be on the lookout for ways that you can fill your own well every day, week, month, and things you can do annually. For example, I do specific things every day which keep my well full. Each day before work, I try to do some reading. What refills my well daily more than anything is the drive to my office. While I'm driving, I don't drive with the radio on. I need complete silence. It's my thinking time. I'm constantly around people in my office, and I'm conducting a seminar, doing an interview, or coaching someone. I love being around people and helping people, but the entrepreneur part of my personality needs to be replenished too. Having quiet time on a regular basis does wonders for me. It mentally recharges my batteries, and it doesn't cost me anything financially. What about you? Maybe you get recharged with a walk or some exercise. Maybe you're refreshed by reading the newspaper on your patio while having a cup of coffee. Do whatever charges your batteries so you have energy to give to others. Once you understand what charges you, fill your well. Remember, this isn't something we're only doing just for ourselves. Our motive here isn't to simply fill our own well. We want to fill our own well so that we are able to help others. Enrich yourself so you can enrich the lives of others. Admittedly, those who have more are able to give more. America's 19th century industrialist, Andrew Carnegie, could have been this century's first billionaire. Instead, he gave away 90% of his fortune over a period of 18 years. When his secretary warned him that he was depleting his personal capital, he happily replied, "Delighted to hear it, my boy. Keep it up." That same era saw John D. Rockefeller, one of the richest men in the world, give away $750 million in his lifetime. You've just read an entire book about accomplishments, overcoming obstacles, and getting to the next level in your life. You now have insights to those who have accomplished incredible feats, and you have a host of tools you can use in your struggle to overcome your own challenges. I assure you that you'll benefit even more if you share your journey to the next level by helping people in need along the way. So live richly and give richly. Fill your own well so your cup can run over to help others. In chapter 19, we covered one of the true joys on your path should be giving. Do well, accomplish things, reach goals, and give to others. Don't give because you think you'll get back. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Give because it's the right thing to do. Giving keeps things in perspective. If you are achievement-oriented, it is likely that you are motivated by reaching personal, business, and spiritual goals and by acquiring certain possessions. You should never give away all you've worked for because that takes away your motivation and you're through. On the other hand, you should always give away something of your accomplishments and share your wealth with others as you go. I assure you that you'll benefit even more if you share your journey to the next level by helping people in need along the way. Live richly and give richly. Fill your own well so your cup can run over to help others. This concludes chapter 19 and the reading of Don't Let Others Rent Space in Your Head.